This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Judges. And now here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Judges, teaching through chapters 17 through 21.
Well, verse 26 tells us, "Then the woman came as the day was dawning and fell down at the door of the man's house where her master was till it was light. And when her master arose in the morning and opened the doors of the house and went out to go his way, there was his concubine fallen at the door of the house with her hands on the threshold." And notice this man of God's great compassion. And he said to her, "Get up and let's be going." But there was no answer. The woman is dead. She's been raped and murdered while he slept. And so the man lifted her onto the donkey, and the man got up and went to his place. Now, on the way home, this atrocity, this terrible crime, begins to soak into this guy. He turned into Gibeah because it was an Israelite city. Never in his wildest imagination did he think that such a brutal and such a violent crime could be committed by his own brothers. We're told when he entered his house, he took a knife, laid hold of his concubine, and divided her into 12 pieces, limb by limb, and sent her throughout all the territory of Israel. A very vivid telegram, I might add. He dismembers the corpse, he packs the pieces on his donkey, and he turns it loose toward the rest of the nation. Such a terrible crime should not be hidden. People need to know. Verse 30. "And so it was that all who saw it said, 'No such deed has been done or seen from the day that the children of Israel came up from the land of Egypt until this day. Consider it, confer, and speak up.'" He got their attention. Mission accomplished. The nation was appalled and alarmed at the savagery of this brutal crime. Chapter 20. "So all the children of Israel came out from Dan to Beersheba." Now, Dan was the northernmost city in Israel. Beersheba was the southernmost outplace. And so from Dan to Beersheba was basically a proverbial way of saying from north to south. And we'll run across this over and over again. From Dan to Beersheba, in other words, from north to south, all of Israel, as well as from the land of Gilead, which were the tribes east of the Jordan River, and the congregation gathered together as one man before the Lord at Mizpah. And the leaders of all the people, all the tribes of Israel, presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God. 400,000 foot soldiers who drew the sword. Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel had gone up to Mizpah. The perpetrators, remember, were Benjamites. And apparently they weren't invited to the meeting. Well, then the children of Israel said, "Tell us, how did this wicked deed happen?" So the Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, "My concubine and I went into Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin, to spend the night. And the men of Gibeah rose against me and surrounded the house at night because of me. They intended to kill me, but instead they ravished my concubine so that she died." And notice the spin he puts on the story. He tells them the truth. He doesn't mention anything about his own cruelty, does he? He doesn't say he threw her out to the mob. Tells them kind of half the truth. "And so I took hold of my concubine, cut her in pieces, and sent her throughout all the territory of the inheritance of Israel because they committed lewdness and outrage in Israel. Look, all of you are children of Israel. Give your advice and counsel here and now. Something needs to be done about this. What do you suggest?" So all the people arose as one man saying, "None of us will go to his tent, nor will any turn back to his house. But now this is the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot. We will take 10 men out of every 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel, 100 out of every 1,000, 1,000 out of every 10,000, to make provisions for the people that when they come to Gibeah and Benjamin, they may repay all of the vileness that they have done in Israel." So all the men of Israel were gathered against the city united together as one man. Then the tribes of Israel sent men through all the tribe of Benjamin, saying, "What is this wickedness that has occurred among you? Now, therefore, deliver up the men, the perverted men who are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and remove the evil from Israel." But basically, he's giving them a chance to save their own necks. He doesn't want all the Benjamites to go to battle just for this one city. The grievance is against Gibeah, not the whole tribe of Benjamin. But the children of Benjamin would not listen to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. Instead, the children of Benjamin gathered together from their cities to Gibeah to go to battle against the children of Israel. And isn't it tragic? Whenever there is a gruesome, perverted act, there always just seems to be somebody who wants to step up and defend the guilty party. Isn't that always interesting? Here it's the children of Benjamin. In our day, it's the ACLU. Or Planned Parenthood, or the people of the American Way, or so forth. And from their cities at that time, the children of Benjamin numbered 26,000 men who drew the sword, besides the inhabitants of Gibeah, who numbered 700 select men. And among all this people were 700 select men who were left-handed. Everyone could sling a stone at a hair's breadth and not miss. They could hit you on a dime. Now, besides Benjamin, the men of Israel numbered 400,000 men who drew the sword. All these men were men of war. Now, you'd think 400,000 battle-ready troops would overwhelm 26,700 Benjamites. But a couple of factors even out the battle. First of all, Gibeah was a very remote, mountainous city that was easily defensible. And the Benjamites, they had these 700 left-handed slingshot sharpshooters. Say that 10 times fast. And as the Israelites would climb the hilly terrain, those left-handed snipers could just kind of pick them off one at a time. Pow, pow, pow. So it was really a more even battle than you think. In verse 18, civil war in Israel breaks out. Then the children of Israel arose and went up to the house of God to inquire of God. They said, "Which of us shall go first to battle against the children of Benjamin?" And the Lord said, "Judah first." So the children of Israel arose in the morning and encamped against Gibeah. And the men of Israel went out to battle against Benjamin. And the men of Israel put themselves in battle array to fight against them at Gibeah. Then the children of Benjamin came out of Gibeah and on that day cut down to the ground 22,000 men of the Israelites. Oh boy, Benjamin wins a surprising victory. And the people, that is the men of Israel, encouraged themselves and again formed the battle line at the place where they had put themselves in array on the first day. Then the children of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until evening and asked counsel of the Lord, saying, "Shall I again draw near for battle against the children of my brother Benjamin?" And the Lord said, "Go up against him." And so the children of Israel approached the children of Benjamin on the second day. And Benjamin went out against them from Gibeah on the second day and cut down to the ground 18,000 more of the children of Israel. All these drew the sword. And why did God allow Benjamin to win these first two rounds of the conflict? I don't know. We're not sure. Here's a theory. Perhaps Israel's numbers had made them a little overconfident, a little proud, a little self-sufficient, and God needed to humble his people before they realized that how much they needed his intervention and his power if they were going to be triumphant. Sometimes God has to humble us that way too, doesn't he? We lose a few battles in the skirmish so that we can trust in God and eventually win the war. Well, then all the children of Israel, that is all the people, went up and came to the house of God and wept. And they sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until evening. Now they're getting serious. They're fasting. And they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And so the children of Israel inquired of the Lord, and the Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days, saying, "Shall I yet again go out to battle against the children of my brother Benjamin, or shall I cease?" And the Lord said, "Go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into your hand." This time, Israel employed some strategy. Then Israel set men in ambush all around Gibeah. And the children of Israel went up against the children of Benjamin on the third day and put themselves in battle array against Gibeah as at the other times. And so the children of Benjamin went out against the people and were drawn away from the city. They began to strike down and kill some of the people as at the other times in the highways, one of which goes up to Bethel and the other to Gibeah, and in the field about 30 men of Israel. And the children of Benjamin said, "They are struck down before us as at first." But the children of Israel said, "Let us flee and draw them away from the city to the highways." So all the men of Israel rose from their place and put themselves in battle array at Baal Tamar. Then Israel's men in ambush burst forth from their position in the plain of Geba, and 10,000 select men from all Israel came against Gibeah, and the battle was fierce. But the Benjamites did not know that disaster was upon them. And the Lord defeated Benjamin before Israel. And the children of Israel destroyed that day 25,100 Benjamites. All these drew the sword. So the children of Benjamin saw that they were defeated. And the rest of the chapter gives us details about the battle. Here's what happens. Israel sets an ambush. A battalion of Israelis draw the Benjamites out of the city, while another unit takes control of the city of Gibeah and sets it ablaze. At first, the Benjamites think that this is a repeat of the prior battles. We got them on the run. And so they're chasing them down the highway. And as soon as the retreating Israelites turn and they see the smoke from the fire of the burning city, they then turn back on the Benjamins that had been drawn out of the city, and they slaughter them. Creates a panic among the Benjamites, and it ensures their slaughter and the victory won by Israel. Verse 47. But 600 men turned and fled toward the wilderness to the rock of Rimmon. And they stayed at the rock of Rimmon for 4 months. And the men of Israel turned back against the children of Benjamin and struck them down with the edge of the sword from every city, men and beasts, all who were found. They also set fire to all the cities that they came to. But remember, there's 600 men now down at the Rock of Rimmon, 600 survivors, Benjamite survivors. Now the men of Israel had sworn an oath at Mizpah saying, "None of us shall give his daughter to Benjamin as a wife." That was when they were real angry. "We're not giving them our daughters." They swore an oath. Then the people came to the house of God, and they remained there before God till evening. They lifted up their voices, and they wept bitterly, and said, "O Lord God of Israel, why has this come to pass in Israel, that today there shall be one tribe missing in Israel?" They're starting to feel sorry for them now. So it was on the next morning that the people rose early and built an altar there and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. The children of Israel said, "Who is there among all the tribes of Israel who did not come up with the assembly to the Lord?" For they had made a great oath concerning anyone who did not come up to the Lord at Mizpah, saying, "He shall surely be put to death." And the children of Israel grieved for Benjamin, their brother, and said, "One tribe is cut off from Israel today." The tribe of Benjamin was 600 men shy of extinction. And the refugees were down at the Rock of Rimmon hanging out. And Israel is remorseful. I mean, they're thinking, wow, you know, we're 12 tribes. You know, we're going to wipe out a whole tribe. There'll be no more tribe of Benjamin. We'll be 11 tribes from now on. It'd be like us going over and wiping out everybody over in Alabama. It used to be 50 states. Now we're just 49 states. Only 600 rednecks from Alabama. And they're down there in Tuscaloosa, you know, hanging out on a rock. And, you know, we start feeling sorry for them and all. Israel cries out, "What shall we do for wives for those who remain? We want to see them repopulate. We want to see, you know, Alabama come back to life over there. Seeing we have sworn by the Lord that we will not give them our daughters as wives." And they said, "What one is there from the tribes of Israel who did not come up to Mizpah to the Lord?" Remember, they said, "Everybody doesn't join us. You know, if they don't join us, then we're going to slaughter them." Well, was there anybody that didn't join us? There was one missing city from the assembly there in Mizpah. And in fact, no one had come up to the camp from Jabesh-Gilead to the assembly. For when the people were counted, indeed not one of the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead was there. So the congregation sent out their 12,000 of their most valiant men and commanded them, saying, go and strike the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead with the edge of the sword, including the women and children. And this is the thing that you shall do. You shall utterly destroy every male and every woman who has known a man intimately. So they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead 400 young virgins who had not known a man intimately, and they brought them to the camp at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan. Now, see what happens when people make up their own rules? This gets crazy. When people make up their own rules, it becomes more and more difficult to tell the good guys from the bad guys. That's what's going on here. I mean, who's doing anything right here? Nobody. Verse 13. Then the whole congregation sent word to the children of Benjamin who were at the rock of Rimmon and announced peace to them. So Benjamin came back at that time and they gave them the women whom they had saved alive of the women of Jabesh-Gilead and yet they had not found enough for them. There were 600 men, there were only 400 virgins. They're 200 wives short. And the people grieved for Benjamin because the Lord had made a void in the tribes of Israel. Then the elders of the congregation said, what shall we do for wives for those who remain, since the women of Benjamin have been destroyed? And they said, there must be an inheritance for the survivors of Benjamin, that a tribe may not be destroyed from Israel. However, we cannot give them wives from our daughters, for the children of Israel have sworn an oath, saying, cursed be the one who gives a wife to Benjamin. But they've got a plan. Hey, man will always have a plan. When you reject God's law, when you fail to seek the Lord, that means you've got to come up with your own plan. And this is where we get ourselves in trouble. When we come up with our own plan rather than following God's plan. Here's Israel's plan. Then they said, in fact, there is a yearly feast of the Lord in Shiloh, which is north of Bethel, on the east side of the highway that goes up from Bethel to Shechem and south of Lebanon. Therefore, they instructed the children of Benjamin, saying, and this gets wild, go lie in wait in the vineyards and watch. And just when the daughters of Shiloh come out to perform their dances, then come out from the vineyards, and every man catch a wife for himself from the daughters of Shiloh, then go to the land of Benjamin. Men, if you're concerned for your daughters, be careful when you let them go to dances. In other words, hey, you go out, just hide in the bushes along the road, and when the girls come out and they start dancing, just pick out a babe and then jump out and grab her. Take her to be your wife. Grab a wife. That's really how Kathy and I met, but just kidding. Then it shall be when their fathers or their brothers come to us to complain that we will say to them, be kind to them for our sakes, because we did not take a wife for any of them in the war, for it is not as though you have given the women to them at this time, making yourselves guilty of your oath. You hear what they're saying? They're saying, look, you didn't break your vow. You said you vowed not to give your daughters to the Benjamites. You didn't give your daughters to the Benjamites. They just took them. So you kept your vow. See what happens when everybody does what's right in their own eyes and little twisted situations you get in? And the children of Benjamin did so. They took enough wives for their number from those who danced, whom they caught. Then they went and returned to their inheritance, and they rebuilt the cities and dwelt in them. And so the children of Israel departed from there at that time, every man to his tribe and family. They went out from there, every man to his inheritance. Which brings us to what was promised this morning. And I know that's why many of you are here tonight. that all-important top 10 list. The top 10 biblical ways to find a wife. And you'll want to jot these scriptures down where you can go back and research them and look them up yourself. Top 10 biblical ways to find a wife. Number 10, we just read it, Judges chapter 21. Go to a party and hide. When the women come out to dance, grab one and carry her off to be your wife. Number 9, Hosea chapter 1. This was Hosea. Find a prostitute and marry her. That's biblical. If you're following Hosea, it's biblical. If you're one of my sons, it's not biblical. Number 8, Exodus 2, verses 16 to 21. This was Moses. Find a man with 7 daughters and impress him by watering his flock. Number 7, Deuteronomy 21. Find an attractive prisoner of war, bring her home, shave her head, trim her nails, give her some new clothes, then she's yours. Just go to the Deuteronomy 20 and read it. It's right there. Number 6, Ruth, chapter 4, verses 5 through 10. We'll read about Boaz next time. Purchase a piece of property and get a woman as part of the deal. That was Boaz. Number 5, Genesis chapter 2, verse 19. This was Adam. Have God create a wife for you while you sleep. And note, this will cost you a rib. Number 4, Genesis chapter 29, verse 15 through 30. This was Jacob. Work 7 years in exchange for a woman's hand in marriage. Get tricked into marrying the wrong woman. Then work another 7 years for the woman you wanted to marry in the first place. 2 for 1. Number 3, Esther 2, verse 3 and 4. This was King Ahasuerus. Become the emperor of a huge nation and hold a beauty contest. The winner becomes your wife. Number 2, Judges chapter 14. This was Samson. When you see someone you like, go home and tell your parents, I have seen a woman. Now get her for me. If your parents question your decision, simply say, get her for me. She's the one for me. That was Samson. And then the number 1 way to go out and get a wife, this is my favorite, by the way, 1 Samuel 18, verse 27. This was David. Cut off 200 foreskins from your future father-in-law's enemies and trade them in for his daughter's hand in marriage. The top 10 biblical ways to find a wife. There you have them. Or, if you don't like, if you're single guys, if you don't like any of those ideas, just pray and trust the Lord. All right? Okay, good. Well, the best way to describe tonight's study is, what a mess. Can you imagine a more sordid mess? And verse 25, the last verse, we need to read it. The last verse in the book of Judges sort of sums it all up. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Because everyone did what was right in his own eyes, the nation was plunged into confusion and chaos and carnage. But aren't you glad that we have a king? That his name is King Jesus. And he has not left us to guess at life, to just wing it, to just make it up as we go. Jesus has left us with the Word of God and with the Spirit of God. And that is enough to lead us in the ways of God, the right way. Understand, Jesus knows better how we should live our lives than we do. So let's follow him.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.